is a ForceCast Microcast.
Size matters not.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Star Wars Cantina.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
All right, we're joined in the cantina this week. We're very, very happy to have them. Jan Dersema and John Ostrander. They are the principal creators of Star Wars Legacy. Welcome.
Howdy, howdy.
Jan, the first question I have is for you. Did I pronounce that name right?
No.
Oh. Could you help me with it?
It's Dersema.
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 Dersema. Okay. All right. Well, we got that out of the way.
Yeah,
okay. Well, welcome both of you. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Well, and for folks that don't know, we do have a lot of listeners that aren't necessarily diehard followers of the comics. You know, we have listeners that are more collectors than they are readers. And then we have, you know, obviously listeners that are more readers than they are collectors. So we kind of try to give a good background of everybody that's on the show. Now, Jan, as far as Expanded Universe goes in the comic world, you're responsible for a lot. And I mean, just running down some of the characters that you've created, Ayla Secura, Quinlan Vos.
Well, those are both John and myself. Yeah.
Right. Right. You and John. And what I'm saying here is, I mean, Jan, you actually were, I mean, you both conceived the character, but you were the one that actually created in terms of a visual representation.
Being
sure, the artist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Some of your credits include the Darth Maul miniseries, Star Wars Republic, the Attack of the Clones adaptation, Star Wars Tales, and of course Legacy. And John, like Jan pointed out, you're also responsible for some of these characters, and not only just the world of Star Wars comics, but you've did work for DC and Marvel, such books as X-Men, Punisher, Martian Manhunter, Justice League. And then in the Star Wars universe, Republic, some of the Jedi series, Star Wars Tales, Boba Fett, and of course Legacy. So,
yeah, Jan and I actually worked on Hawk World or Hawkman.
Both of them, yeah.
Oh, Jan, yeah. You also did some non-Star Wars work then.
Oh yeah, tons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I even did one of the issues of Star Wars back in the Marvel days.
Right.
That was one of my first.
Yeah, I saw that. So that was just a one issue that you worked on?
Yeah, just one issue. I think it was not a double size issue, maybe a size and a half or something. I can't remember.
And was that your first foray into working with the Star Wars property?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And John, what was your first Star Wars project?
Twilight. It was my first time doing Star Wars. Tim Truman, who had been scripting Republic, or what would become Republic at that point, was stepping aside to work on a special project, and then he didn't come back. First of all, they needed a fill-in guy, so they asked me, and Jan and I teamed up for that, and then we gradually sort of convinced them that it was the right idea to have a regular team on the book, and that we were the right regular team.
Now, was that the first time that the two of you collaborated?
No. No. We did Hawkworld, Hawkman. Jan, what else have we done together?
We had worked on just one Grimjack story, a backup for Grimjack at one point.
Yeah.
But mostly the Hawkman stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was it one of those partnerships that, I mean, you pretty much knew from the beginning that the two of you had similar visions or similar styles, or what was it that enables you to work so well together?
Well,
I've known
Jeff
for a long time. Yeah, and we've known each other just for like forever. And we bring both, you know, a huge love of Star Wars to the project, to it as well. And Jan has also just the most incredible eyes in terms of being able to see things, I think, that I've ever encountered. She actually found the prototype for our character, Quinlan Vos, in the background of Phantom Menace where he was sitting in the background of a table that you saw him for maybe three frames. I'm not kidding.
We asked him, was it... Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. You know, it wasn't until the DVD came out and I was able to stop motion the frames where she told me the character was that I was able to finally see that she did, in fact, get it exactly from that guy.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's very interesting. We want to go into some of that as well, because I mean, when you look at these two characters, Ayla Secura and Quinlan Vos, certainly, I mean, their contributions to the expanded universe, and then in Ayla Secura's case, actually being added to the film, Attack of the Clones, it's very significant. And now, I had heard, and I don't know if this is true. So the model for Quinlan Vos is definitely this fellow that was in the background of Phantom Menace.
Well, as John says, he was there for about three frames behind where Sebulba and Anakin are mixing it up over Jar Jar. And, you know, I saw him back there, and I said, you know, John and I had asked the editor, I think it was Pete James at the time, if we could pick out a character to use for this Twilight miniseries, this arc. And he said, yeah, go ahead and find, you know, find an extra to highlight. So we went to the movies and were watching it, and I said, I found the guy. And I was like, where? And I said, oh, well, I'll draw him. And I came home and drew him, and he was like, well, where'd you see him?
I know, that's the other thing. I mean, you got to remember, this is before the DVD came out.
Right.
He saw it from the movie screen, once, and boom, she had it.
I was just struggling to try to see the ETs in the Senate scene, let alone just random character like that. But no, that's very cool. And of course, the character has just gone on and exploded and become one of the most loved in the expanded universe. And you know, I know that there's a big cheering section out there hoping that he's going to be one of the Jedi that's going to figure in possibly this live action TV series.
Nobody's hoping that more than John and me, I think.
So we can count on the two of you also being the lead cheerleaders. And any comment on whether or not this is a possibility?
We have no idea.
No idea. You know, it's not something that we decide.
George just doesn't consult with us. we come up with these fabulous things. You know, we go, George, you over here. And he just doesn't consult.
Right.
But well, the answer to your other question, yes, Quinn was based on that character in the background of that of the movie.
Okay,
I think I've answered that. So
it's not it's not based on anybody that you know personally, or.
Well, the funny thing is, the other funny story about this whole thing is I do use some models for characters in the book, and at one point, a friend of mine said, a fellow I'd known for a couple of years, in the 501st. Said, I know this guy looks just like Quinn. And I was like, get out. You know, people always saying, I know this guy who looks like Quinn.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, yeah, okay, right. So he said, I'm going to send you some pictures. And he sent me the pictures, and I opened them up. And I'm very blasé, and I'm looking, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this guy looks just like him. And, really, truly looked just like him. And I couldn't have drawn him better. And so I used him for a model for, about 3 years worth of the book.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was really cool, and he was very excited to do it, because he happened to be a longtime Star Wars fan as well.
Right.
You know, so right. It was just one of those funny things.
Well, and not only do you create your different characters, but you had a character based on yourself, is that right? Or Samadu?
Yeah. Joe Caroni decided... He wanted to do a Jedi character based on me, and I was like, oh, whatever, go ahead. You know, I don't know. It's one of those things that's like, oh, this is cool, but oh, gosh. I don't like to be in the limelight. I like to be behind the scenes. You know, I like to be behind the camera, thanks, not in front of it.
Right. Well, and it's official now. I mean, as far as Star Wars Insider is concerned, it's, you know, you are officially part of canon, as they say.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool, you know?
John, when are we going to see you wielding a lightsaber somewhere?
I don't know about the lightsaber, but I had a friend actually before I entered into comics who borrowed me as a character in Supergirl. So there's Johnny Ostrander in some very old issues of Supergirl. I get a little bit worried sometimes that DC owns the rights to me.
Well, that's always the old catchphrase is your answer to somebody. So, you know, whether it's George or DC or somebody else, there's always somebody that's got their head hanging their head over you.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit now in terms of obviously your history with the franchise goes back several years, but I wanted to ask Jan in particular, when the opportunity came to work on the Attack of the Clones adaptation, what was that like just in terms of the logistics where you're going to be, you know, privy to a lot of these deep dark secrets that everybody's, of course, dying to know as the film was in development?
It was pretty cool. I mean, it was kind of scary in a way because you don't want to ever slip up and say anything about anything, but I pretty much know. I mean, I'm sitting in my studio by myself, and who do I talk to? You know? It's like, you know, I don't see anybody. So I wasn't too worried about that, and it was really neat to get to know the stuff ahead of time. Some of the things were very, very safely guarded. I never saw the actual scene where Anakin goes in to find his mom, to find Shmi. I never saw the footage for that, any of the outtakes for that or anything. I had to make it all up. That was very guarded. And a couple other things, I'm trying to remember. That was the most guarded thing, I think.
Now,
and then at the last...
In a situation like that where they're not going to let you see anything prior to it, how do you approach that? I mean, do they give you do you just hand them something and they say, no, this is all wrong, or yes, this is fine, or are you just kind of, you know, blindly going up there?
I got a good description of what was going on, and then I used the Force.
That's a handy ally to have at that point.
Definitely, yeah.
So
no, I mean, I just had to visualize it from what I would, the way I thought they might show it. And, I, you know, other than that, there was really no visual to call on.
Well, and that's fairly amazing because I remember reading those, and it doesn't miss a beat. You know, because I actually read them after I had seen the film. So there's nothing that makes you jump out and go, oh, that's not how it was in the film. It represents it pretty closely. So the fact that you can do that without ever seeing it, that just lends more to your intuitive force talents.
Right. Well, I remember setting that scene up, and I remember them saying that everybody up there was crying when they saw it. They were so sad. They said, oh, is this like the film? It looked just like it, and it was so sad. It made them cry. I was like, oh, that's great, but I'm glad, you know, I mean, it was kind of a weird mixed emotion kind of a thing, you know?
Right.
So we're talking about a film with a May 2002 release date, and Jan, I don't mean to be putting you on the spot, but do you remember when that project first started for you?
I think I started it probably September the year before.
Okay.
Around September, yeah. I know there wasn't as much time as we thought there was going to be because, of course, there's always the, you know, things where the script has to be changed and moved around and, you know, different things happen. I remember starting it and then stopping it and starting it again and having nothing else to do. And that's, I think, when I was working on that one story I did for Star Wars Tilt called Ghost with Quinn, because I had nothing to do. I was waiting around for something to happen. So I said, I need work, guys. I'm dying here, you know. So they gave me a story to do.
Yeah, well, that's great.
John is off to another step in the meantime, so, you know.
Right. Now, you said there were some things that you didn't see, but I'm assuming then there were some things that you did. And what form did they take? Were you actually sent any video or just still photography? What was it?
No video, just green screen shots mostly, and okay. And also reference shots.
Okay, of the actors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the actors and the sets. I mean, I had tons of reference on Dexter's Diner in particular. There was this, like, you know, pile of stuff. And it's a scene that maybe lasted in the book maybe 2 pages.
Right.
Yeah. So you never knew what you were going to get. You'd get what was available. And, you know, that's the way it is with those kind of things.
Well, if you don't mind, what we'll do now is just kind of turn the page and let's talk. We've talked a little bit about the past. Let's talk about what's going on right now, which is Star Wars Legacy. And I have to tell you guys that I've been a Star Wars fan all my life. I was born the year that the first film came out, and it's something I've always had with me. But I'll tell you that Star Wars Legacy is the first Star Wars comic series that I have gotten into really heavily and, you know, won't miss an issue. So it's I really appreciate it. I think it's a great, great storyline, and I look forward to it every month. I mean, some of the things that we've talked about here on the show is that this is a series that takes very familiar elements of the Star Wars universe and just gives them sometimes a little tweak and sometimes a big twist. So as you were planning this series out, how did you decide what elements you wanted to keep? And, you know, Princess in Peril, the Reluctant Hero, some of these things. In determining the how you're going to develop the story, how did you decide what to keep and what to throw out?
Well, I think the first major thing that we decided was that there had to be a Skywalker, you know, which might not be as obvious as one might think. You know, certainly we were thus committing the franchise to the fact that there'd be a Skywalker down the line. The question would then be, what sort of Skywalker? And basically, we wanted to come up with someone who was neither Luke nor Anakin nor any of the others. About the closest, I think, just in general overall concept, just to begin with, was sort of like, well, what if Han Solo had a lightsaber?
Yeah.
And he's a lot more than that. But we want, you know, like, we want someone scruffy. And then, as Jay and I have talked elsewhere, you know, scruffy back when Star Wars first came out looked like one thing. Scruffy today has to look like something else.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. You know,
so, so we had to do that. The Princess in Peril, we wanted the Empire because the Empire is cool. We wanted Sith. Mm-hmm. And we wanted a lot of Sith.
Yeah.
I requested a lot of Sith. I liked the Sith. Well, one wasn't good enough.
Well, and that brings up another issue. It seems as though there's a very common thread in the look of the Sith. Is this something that's done deliberately to help the readers determine who's good and who's bad, as far as, you know, kind of the red and the tattooed look a la Darth Maul? Or is this kind of part of something, traditions that we'll find out why this is?
I think it's more traditions you're going to find out why it is.
Okay.
At some point. And certainly it does help as an identification device, but I don't know that it's the only thing you're going to see with Sith. There's reasons for it, which we haven't really gone into yet or explored yet.
Okay.
Is that on the docket as something that's going to come out eventually, or is that just going to always be that shroud of mystery that seems to follow around the Sith?
Well, it's part of that also. I can see that Darth Krayt himself, you know, in trying to make an identity for his own Sith, you know, wants that look, you know, in order to bind them together as a group. You know, so there's a bunch of reasons why, but one reason that I could, that I certainly think is, you know, is relevant is Krayt, who's the head of the Sith Order, is trying to create a different Sith Order, and this is one of the methods used.
Well, and there's been a lot of things that this series has sort of tackled that, like you were just saying, John, that you're committing the property to there being a line of Skywalkers for. You know, I believe, what, is it 130 years after the Battle of Yavin? So that's a long commitment in the expanded universe. In addition, kind of changing the rule of two, which is a Sith tradition. So how did the powers that be at Lucasfilm take to some of these pretty significant commitments?
I think they've been very supportive, actually, overall, given the fact that if you get them to buy the initial idea in the first place, that, hi, we're taking the whole timeline and just drop-kicking it down 100 years, and that there won't be Luke, and there won't be Han, and there won't be Leia in it, you know, like, once you get them past the shock of that, they're real good to balance everything else. You know, no, they've been just, Sue over there, Leland, everyone's been really tremendously supportive. And I've extended it over to the folks over at Del Rey as well. They've been very supportive. The authors there have been very supportive. We are exchanging notes back and forth in order to make sure not only are we not treading on one another's coattails, but also how can we feed one another in terms of the plane of things.
Well, that's interesting because here you have, and to kind of clear this up for maybe some of our listeners that are a little bit newer to this, you do have a series of novelizations, which is the Legacy series and Legacy of the Force, and then you also have the comic book series Legacy. Was that a coincidence, or was that something strategic behind the scenes?
That I'm not sure of. I do know that we came up with the name Legacy first, and then I think it's part and parcel they decided that this would be the Legacy era, which actually makes a lot of sense when you get right down to it, because you're starting to see that this move away from the big three and more into what is the legacy that they have created, you know, both in their immediate children and then further down the line. So the name that way actually makes sense to me.
Okay. And as a collaborating duo, the two of you, as you were saying, John, you had to determine, okay, well, there's going to be a Skywalker, what kind of Skywalker, and that sort of thing. At what point, Jan, do you have enough to start doing some sketches, and then do you show them to John and say, okay, is this kind of what you had in mind? I mean, does the collaboration work that way, or how does it work exactly?
Well, with Cade, I mean, well, let me just put it this way. A character like Darth Talon pretty much came together right away. She was there in my mind, and I drew her out, and I showed her to John, and I said, what do you think? He's like, oh, yeah, we've got to go with her. No matter what else happens, she's got to be in it.
I agree,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, she was there. But Cade was the toughest evolution of all.
What was that, John? I'm sorry?
I was just saying a hot, sexy, deadly Sith. Come on.
Yeah, right. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
That's right.
Really. But Cade was tough. And I'm sure John remembers that I was, Deliah Blue, easy, no problem. I came up with, Jiraiya Sin, no problem. He was right there. Ronfell was right there. CFL, no problem. All the Sith were right there. But Cade, I think I was awake nights thinking about what to do with this guy, because I wanted him to be a Skywalker, but I didn't want him to be Luke. I didn't want him to be Anakin. I wanted him to have his own individual personality. So I went through quite a few versions of him, which I would send to John and say, how about this? How about this? And send him to Randy. And send him to Sue, and she wasn't keen. And finally, John said to me something like, well, you really can't get a blonde guy to look like a tough guy.
I did say that.
He said that. And I said, there's a challenge there. Okay, I'm going to do this thing.
So that's been my problem all these years.
And so Cade kind of evolved out of that. I mean, I wanted to make him look like he'd, spent too much time under those Tatooine suns, that he was... not necessarily from Tatooine, of course, but that he was out there in the galaxy, and he was a scavenger, and he was a rogue, and he was a pirate and a bounty hunter. He's not a nice guy. He doesn't really care much for what he looks like. He gathers pieces of his costume from, the Jedi pawn shop or the Mandalorian Star Us or something. He just sort of gathers things as he goes. He has a set of weapons. He just picks up here and there. He's a man of the universe.
Dan doesn't throw details in just because, I think that this would look nice. Oh, that's kind of cute. Why not do that this way? When Jan puts a detail in, it's because she has something in mind, and she's telling you something.
I've got a backstory for everything.
yeah, she does.
Oh, yeah.
She knows why he's wearing anything that he's got on.
Right, right, exactly.
Out of all the things, when you were first setting up this story, what was the one element that was kind of the most controversial, or the one that maybe you were the most afraid of?
I think the very fact that Cade was not going to be, your stamp. Everyone is assuming that, Cade's going to clean up and his act and his wardrobe and take the lightsaber and become this shining Jedi. Don't hold your breath on that one. We do not conceive him with that in mind. where he's going to wind up going and doing, we're not going to guarantee you that he's not going to go to the dark side on it. I mean, is he going to be Luke? Is he going to be Anakin? Is he going to be something else entirely in between? Mm-hmm. Like, what's his path going to be? You know, like, he ain't any of them.
Right. Right.
So, the beauty of legacy is we're not tied to anything. We can go anywhere with him.
Right. And I think that's what we've seen so far, is that his real desire at this point is to not even really be involved at all. And, you know, so that's really shaping all of his choices. And that's what's really kind of turned things on its ear a little bit, is that, you know, here's a Skywalker with the legacy, no pun intended, that, you know, just would rather be left alone.
He's anti-heroic. You know, he's even less involved than Han was when you first encounter Han.
Yeah, I'm thinking he kind of takes after his great-great-great-great-uncle Owen a little bit.
Well, yeah, sure.
But, I mean, obviously he's got the emotional baggage of seeing the massacre and, you know, so, I mean, he has his reasons why he's been turned off against this. So, I mean, it's not as though he's just kind of, he wants to be Switzerland, or, you know, he, is like Owen in that sense. But, one of the probably most profound moments, I think, in this whole, series so far has been seeing Luke Skywalker appear as a Force ghost.
Mm-hmm. Now that was controversial, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember that the headline at, I think it was either the Force.net or Rebel Scum, was Luke Skywalker is dead. And I saw that come across my RSS reader, and I went, oh my gosh, Mark Hamill, what? You know, that was the first place I went, and then I saw the photo, and I was like, oh, okay. But so that must have been something that obviously Lucasfilm did not just grant lightly.
No,
but at the same time, from their point of view as well, it also makes sense. We're not talking about how he dies, when he dies, where he dies, but at a certain point it makes sense that he's dead.
Right.
You know, unless you, of course, you're assuming that this is a mental projection and that he's actually alive on a mountaintop somewhere.
That could be.
I'm not saying it's not. You know, okay?
That's right.
Well, whenever it happens, hopefully they'll get rid of Luke better than they got rid of Captain Kirk. it's just, you know, but at any rate, so when the decision was made, Jan, to show Luke as a Force ghost, how did you decide to go ahead and put him in the traditional robes? Was it just a foregone conclusion or?
That was Lucasfilm's request, actually. They wanted him in the traditional robes, in keeping with the other Force ghosts. So there'd be a consistency. I was just looking in the comic today in the way it's colored, and you'll also notice that he has both of his hands, and one of them isn't covered by a glove. So,
right.
You know, if this is Anakin, was no longer needing the mask or anything. I guess when you're a ghost, you get everything back. You know, good again.
Right, right.
You can choose at what age that you want to appear as. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I mean, the reason that he looks around Cade's age is because, you know, maybe better to get Cade to pay, you know, to actually listen to him.
Obviously he's a Force ghost, but that still leaves him as a character in the universe there of the Legacy series. Is that something that the both of you enjoy, or, you know, John in particular, is that something that you like having to deal with, or is it sometimes a hindrance?
Oh no! It's something that we wanted.
You know, yeah.
I mean, something. It's not something that that Lucasfilm asked us to do. It's something that we asked Lucasfilm if we could do,
mm-hmm.
and we very specifically wanted it to be Luke.
Yeah, we went through quite a few. We thought, you know, we thought maybe Anakin. We thought, you know, this character and that character, and finally said, no, Luke is really the only one who would come forward to try to set his great grandson straight. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's the only one in terms of who the audience knows, who is visually immediately identifiable, who also has a real moral authority to talk to Cade.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned.
I see that. That makes a lot of sense. Now, as far as when you're writing him, Obviously, you don't know all that he went through after what's already been printed. So does that make it hard to write, because you kind of have to be kind of ambiguous maybe at times, because you don't know what his end was, or you know what his final challenges in his life were.
No, but I'm assuming that if he's a Force ghost, then he's very strong in the Force. So he remained very strong in the Force right through to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I wanted to write a Luke who was strong, who knew who and what he was about, and could and frankly didn't take a whole lot of backtrack from his progeny either. When Kate is complaining about his life, Luke's response is please.
Right.
I've been through worse than you've ever been through, so don't even start.
Well, and obviously, I mean, the series has really yielded a lot of great characters and visually just stunning work. What are some of your favorites? Jan, we'll start with you. What are some characters that jump out at you that are just maybe a pleasure to draw and make move in the world?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. All of them. Really, truly, Kate is a whole lot of fun, simply because he's got such attitude.
Mm.
Shadow is another one who I really enjoy drawing. He's, there's something about him. He's always got a little smile on his face, even when he's fighting Sith. And he's got a toughness to him, which is really cool, and an attitude. An attitude. Let's see. But I love drawing Delia Blue because she's fun, and CFL because she moves a certain way and just has a certain look on her face. And there's really no character that I don't like to do. Wolf Sazen, because he's so elegant. I guess I like all of them. Yeah.
John, any ones that jump out at you as favorites?
Well, like Jan said, there's so many that I love. There are some I can say are surprises. For instance, one of the big things that has come out of this is just how much the fans have taken to the Imperial Knights.
Oh, the Imperial Knights, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just as a concept, even before people knew exactly what they're about, just seeing pictures of them and going, "Oh, Imperial Knights! How cool is that?" So that's kind of cool. But every once in a while, too, we'll start doing something with a smaller character,
mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden they'll just come alive and start doing something. There's a character in the first couple of issues by the name of Naxi Skrieger, who's just meant to be a throwaway,
right.
And he's going to work his way back into it simply because I loved writing Naxi. Naxi's just this little slime ball, and I'm afraid I'm addicted to writing these little slime ball characters. But there are characters you haven't even seen yet. I mean, this is one of the things that's just amazing. Just with the first arc, yes, there's a bunch of characters getting out there. We're introducing you to people left, right, and center. But we've got a whole stable of characters who haven't even gotten on stage yet. So in between the ones who are out there and still want and that who we need to develop more, there's still a whole bunch of them who you're only starting to learn more about. And then there's the others who are waiting until we get around to actually showing them.
Yeah, some we mentioned in Zero who haven't appeared yet, and some that we have in our minds that haven't even hit the books yet. We had so much stuff developed for issue Zero that we had to pare down in order to fit it all in. And then Randy gave us two extra pages. We started it out as maybe a 16 page, and it was 18,
yeah.
Or 18, and it was 20, I think. We had so much to put in there. So there's so much, really, that's still in my notebook and John's notebook that hasn't even seen center stage yet.
Well, not unlike the challenge that George Lucas had when he was first creating the original story, having too much to fit. And
right.
It's not a bad problem to have when you're playing in a universe like the Star Wars universe.
I think something that the fans sort of instinctually know or they can tell that, hi, you know, here's a story that we're telling you, and it's the tip of the iceberg. They can sense there's so much more there that's waiting to be told as well, and that just sort of gives the whole story a sense of a galaxy, of a richness that you know that we're going to get to it. It's just going to take a while, and the fact that we know that it's there, we know where we're going. We're headed off in directions, you know. We know what's coming up, and the surprises that we're going to spring, and the and where the story's going to go, and we have ideas for where we want to go in the next couple of years. So.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that strikes me when reading this book is how mysterious everybody is. I mean, I can't. And I mean, you've got the different factions. Obviously, you've got the Jedi that have sort of disbanded. You have the remnants of the old Empire, the Imperials, and you got the Sith that have sort of taken control after this war. It's really hard to decide, with the exception of the Sith, who's the real good guys and who are the bad guys. I mean, that's obviously something that y'all are doing on purpose. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's ambiguous. I mean, especially when you look at Emperor Fel, who we don't really see a lot of. But when he does, when he does come in, you know, he looks like a pretty decent guy. You know, you think, well, you know, he can't be all that bad. But obviously, you know, he did what he did in working with the Sith. So I mean, that's the thing that just really jumps at me is just everybody. I don't know where Cade's coming from. I don't know where Jiraiya's coming from. Princess Fel, maybe she seems like, you know, a pretty straight arrow in the Jedi, but, it really just keeps you guessing at all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We intend to keep you, and that's part of the fun of it, because one of the things that we wanted to do when we were creating it was to recreate that feeling of discovery that we all got when we first discovered Star Wars, that you didn't know who these characters were. You didn't know exactly where it was going or what could happen next. I mean, with the prequels, yes, George Lucas went back and filled in all the background so we could have some idea of how this all developed. But that means, as a result, we've known for a long time where the story was going. Mm-hmm. At this point, we have a story, and you have no idea where we're going.
Right. Well,
that's real Star Wars.
Yes, it is, and it's a lot of fun to read. How does the fan reaction been to the series so far? Do you get a lot of feedback from fans?
Oh yeah, and what's been really gratifying is that Legacy is actually selling better than Republic did. I think, as I said before, what was amazing is Dark Horse decided to just cancel all the books and then start off again, which was a tremendous risk for it at the time. The Star Wars franchise has been a major player for Dark Horse for a long time, and so to take the risk of canceling all the existing Star Wars books in order to start new books, that's a really risky business, because you don't know. I mean, you have faith that the new stuff's going to work, but you don't know.
But we didn't know what the acceptance would be for a new Skywalker.
Yeah. So, but the response has been tremendous. We're getting people are saying we hear from people who say that they have not read Star Wars comics for years, or maybe even haven't been into the Star Wars extended universe for a long time, but they just got drawn by the whole idea behind Legacy, and they just felt that they had to sample it. Even some of the people who started off hating the sound of it, and there were people who were just violently opposed to Legacy, you know, at the beginning. A lot of them have come around, you know, and written us and told us, okay, you won me over.
Well, and that's one of the things that we've been telling our listeners is that, because we get a lot of emails about the expanded universe, and some folks are, you know, steeped into it very highly and they know everything there is to know about it. And then there are others that haven't had the time or the opportunity to get into it, and they're a little intimidated because there's so much out there. And when this series came along, it was a great opportunity to just kind of start with something fresh, something new, and everybody is sort of on the same page. On, you know, it's up to anybody's guess.
That's exactly what we wanted when we went into it. Certainly, there's plenty of what we call Easter eggs, stuff that's in there for the longtime fan, people who know a lot about it. That's great. But we wrote it, we created in with people who, if all you know is the movies, you should be fine.
All right, and just a couple of final thoughts here. I know that you can't divulge too much, but just for our listeners, is there, give us one little tidbit of what we can expect coming up.
Well, we have our next major storyline that's going to start around issue 14. Not going to say too much about it, but Cade gets busy.
Okay. All right. Jan, would you like to add anything to that?
I don't know what he means. well, so there's some pretty major events coming up in that storyline, which I think are going to surprise a lot of people. Just expect the unexpected.
All right. Now, is the trade paperback for Broken, is that on sale now?
No, that'll be out, I think, in April, I believe.
Okay, and there's also going to be a hardcover version is available as well?
Yes, there is. I think that's available through the Star Wars official site.
Okay.
All and right. Limited to 1,500 copies, I think. I'm not sure.
Well, we'll have links to all that on our show notes at the website at Force.net and RebelScum.com. I want to thank you both for, again, taking the time to speak with us and bring us up to date on this really exciting series, and we hope to have you back at some point so we can talk a little bit more about some of the other things that you've done. We get, I mean, not just the current work, but we get emails all the time on having more guests on the show like yourselves, and we really, really appreciate it, and I know that our listeners appreciate it very much.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, great. Yeah, this has been fun talking to you.
Jan, I'm sorry about the name thing.
Don't worry about it. believe me, that's not the worst pronunciation I've heard.
I just switched around my S and my E there.
I've gotten Dersima, Dersima, Dersema, Dersima, Dersima, you name it. And I don't even say it correctly. You know, as far I met someone from Holland, and they said, "Oh, you're not saying your name right." And I was like, "Okay, well, that's the way my family says it." So, yeah, it's anybody's guess. So, you know, I don't worry about it too much.
John's name isn't so tough. I mean, it's pretty much...
No, you know, it's spelled Ostrander, but it's pronounced throat warbler mangrove.
Mangrove. Well, I've heard Ostrander.
Horse Wrangler, Osterizer.
Yeah.
That's the place of fame, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Don't worry about it. You know, it's been a lot of fun talking to you, and it's always fun talking about Star Wars. You know, John and I both love this stuff. It's, you know, I think some of my family gets tired of me talking about it. It's Star Wars all the time. It's pretty much the references fly around here, but, you know, John's always a willing ear.
Well, and not to get too corny or anything, but in all sincerity, thank you guys so much for... the contribution that you've made to this property that is so much fun to talk about and so much fun to read about. We really appreciate it. It's guys like you that keep it going for us fans.
We feel seriously, you know, it's been, you know, it's a real honor to play in George's sandbox.
we've heard that over and over again, that most people are just really happy just to be able to be there.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a lot of fun so far, you know.
All right, guys. Thanks again so much, and have a great night.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.